So England take on Spain in their first UEFA Nations League match this international break. And I guess the question that most people are asking are, what on earth is the UEFA Nations League? Because, well, it doesn't only start now, but it goes on until March 2020. So to shed a bit of light on it, I'm joined by Chris Flanagan from 442. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you on. So do you understand it more than any of us?
Well, I've tried my best. I've kind of tried to sit down and actually read through it three times now, and I still don't entirely understand it, but I've done my best anyway.
The first time it came into my kind of consciousness was when I was playing Football Manager one time, and suddenly my players started going off to play in this UEFA Nations League instead of a normal friendly. So what on earth is it actually there for?
Well, I think there's two main aims. One is they felt that having so many international friendlies between tournaments was a bit excessive, and they wanted something a bit more meaningful. So that's one reason why they've introduced this. And also it groups teams against other countries of similar levels. So, for instance, England are in a group with Spain and Croatia. So it will give them, you know, useful matches against teams of a similar level. And you'd hope as well that would benefit Gareth Southgate's England going into the Euros and the next World Cup.
So basically, it's just increasing the amount of competitive football that the players are playing, which is important because the teams that you just mentioned, Croatia, for example, how often do England actually play them in a competitive match outside of the World Cup? They're only ever going to be drawn alongside maybe one at the most of these teams in a World Cup or European Championships qualifying group. They do play the likes of France and Germany in friendlies, but you can only learn so much from a friendly.
Well, that's right. I mean, you look at England's record over the last few years and how many top teams have we actually beaten in a competitive match? We won in Germany in a friendly and things like that. But if we could, you know, get some good victories in competitive matches against Spain and Croatia, that would probably benefit these young England players quite a lot in terms of them when, you know, hopefully they face them in a big tournament further down the line, they'll believe they can do it. I think it is too seldom that they play teams like that competitively. So this will hopefully help with that.
So how does it work then? How do they manage to drag this out until March 2020?
Well, how long have you got? So basically, yes. Yeah, so, well, just to take England, for example, obviously a group of three teams. The winners of the group will go into a finals competition next summer with three other group winners. So it'll be a four-team competition to decide the winners of the overall Nations League. Now, then they start the normal Euro 2020 qualifying, I think in March. That'll go through to November of next year. And then after that, so 20 teams qualify for the Euros through the normal qualifying. So then there'll be four more teams to find for the Euro 2020 tournament, and they will come from the Nations League, which will be in a playoff in March 2020. Now, that playoff is horrifically complicated. It's quite difficult to explain, but basically, England are in the pot A, should I say, of the 12 best teams in Europe, and the four teams, if there are four teams that haven't qualified for Euros already, they will go into this playoff in March 2020. But there are, the likelihood is that less than four teams will not have qualified by then. Europe has been divided into pot A, pot B, pot C and pot D. 12 best teams are in pot A, down to the kind of the 15 or so worst teams in pot D. And you'll get a Euro 2020 qualifier from each of those pots. It means that you're probably going to get someone like Azerbaijan qualifying for the Euros because of this.
It sounds awfully complicated.
It is.
Needlessly complicated. But I guess the gist of it is we're still going to get the big hitting nations are still going to qualify for the European Championships, as you would expect them to. But this is giving a lesser known football nation the chance to mix it with the big boys on a competitive stage for the first time. But we're not going to be saturating the market with five or six of them. It's just going to be one or two.
Yes, that's right. There'll be one so-called minnow in there. Although if it ends up being all rich Azerbaijan, then it might not be quite the fairy tale story that people think. It's designed to allow one team from that smaller kind of pot, you know, your Faroe Islands, people like that, potentially to make it to the actual tournament at the end of it.
England in Pot A, as you mentioned, then Wales, the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland all in Pot B, and Scotland, I'm afraid, languishing in Pot C. Is there a trophy or something at the end of the Nations League then?
There is, yes. Yeah, so for England, if they were to win their group with Spain and Croatia, they will then go into this tournament, which is actually next summer in 2019, this 14 tournament, which will be the four group winners of the Pot A. So that would be, you know, probably teams like France and people like that that they'll end up playing against. And if they were to win this group with Spain and Croatia, and there's a trophy at the end of that, that's in the summer of 2019.
It'd be interested to see how much that kind of tournament is valued then, should England get to the final, because let's be honest, if they get knocked out, people will just go, oh, it's only the Nations League. But it'll be interesting to see if the country do get behind them should they get to the final. Do we know where they are going to take place, the finals and semis?
No, that's the other uncertainty at this moment. That will basically depend on which four teams are in the finals. They'll choose one of those four teams once we know, and we won't know that for quite a while yet. So, yeah, there's a lot of uncertainties, and I think it's one of these competitions that's so complicated, we'll only really understand it once we've gone through it once and kind of get a feel for, you know, what actually happens at the end of it.
Absolutely right. Well, we'll see how England do against Spain anyway. It's Radio City Talker. Chris Flanagan from 442 joins me, Matt Jones, on the kickoff. And in the latest 442, you've got loads and loads of great stuff on Liverpool.
We have, yeah. Our cover story is the new Liverpool, basically. Obviously, a lot of really exciting signings this summer, and we kind of look at, you know, whether this can be the year they can win the Premier League. Within that, we've got interviews with Andrew Robertson, James Milner, and also the potential new star Rian Brewster. And yes, there's an awful lot of Liverpool content in there this month.
I'm just having a little look at the Andrew Robertson stuff, and obviously just been named Scotland captain. But what a year he's had since first coming to Liverpool and not being able to get into the team, or being given his time to adjust to life maybe at Anfield instead of being thrown in at the deep end. And well, now I think most people would agree he's probably one of the top three or four left backs in the Premier League.
Yeah, and can be, you know, the way he's going, he could be one of the top three or four in the world pretty soon. He's been playing that well. Yeah, I mean, it's been hugely impressive. We say, like you say, when he signed, people perhaps weren't quite sure how regularly he would play, but he's made that position very much his own now. He's done really well.
Yeah, this interview with 442, he says, I was a real pain to be around at first, to be honest. My girlfriend probably hated me for those first couple of months, but she was one of the people who kept me going. I hadn't come through an academy system where boys are used to being in and out. I'd worked my way through the ranks and was used to playing matches. So it would have taken him a while to adjust, but then he goes on to say, when I got my chance, I knew that I had to take it, and he really has had to take it. You mentioned there the new Liverpool and all the brilliant interviews that you've got. There must be such an air of positivity around those players at the moment.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I spoke to James Milner, and I think he's very optimistic. I mean, obviously, you know, they had the disappointment with the Champions League final, and I think that'll only motivate them even more. But he's obviously been through a situation at Manchester City where they rose to win the league, and I think he sees the similarities at Liverpool and thinks that, you know, this could be Liverpool's time to do that now.
Yeah, a couple of Premier League titles for him at Manchester City. Got the FA Cup and the League Cup during his time there as well. It's the European honour that has eluded him, to be honest, and the Reds certainly unlucky with the way things panned out against Madrid earlier this year. But what are your thoughts? Do you think they could topple Man City this year, or are City just too good?
I think it'll be close. I think it'll be very, very close. I think Manchester City, obviously, last season were a lot better than everyone. You're always going to get that slight dip after a season like that, where maybe they can't replicate that to quite the extent. They've lost De Bruyne for a little while. So I think that gives Liverpool a chance now. And, you know, they've just got to keep winning. And if they keep winning, they're really going to start putting pressure on City.
And that 4-4-2 is out now?
It is. Oh, it's out tomorrow. I'm in the shops tomorrow.
Brilliant stuff. Chris, thank you for your time this morning.
No problem at all.